Blog Talk Radio.
Mr. Media Interview, brought to you today by the Fitness Buff Show, the leanest, fastest hour on radio. Check it out online at fitnessbuffshow.com and start getting fitter and faster today. In the Shadow of the Moon, the new documentary directed by David Sington captures all the emotion and enthusiasm about space travel that once transfixed the American public and seems strangely absent from today's world of technology. I was 8 years old when the Eagle landed on the moon in July 1969. I haven't been the same since. I anticipated a lifetime ahead of flying around the neighborhood with jetpacks, manned missions to Mars, and all kinds of things that before that July day were science fiction. And after, well, they seemed just around the corner. Now I'm approaching my 47th birthday, and none of my expectations of a space age came to pass. None. Zero. Zip. Watching In the Shadow of the Moon, I remembered that lost feeling. It's a wonderful experience, which is why I'm looking forward to talking with director David Sington today. David, welcome to Mr. Media.
Thank you.
I appreciate your time. I love the movie. It really did take me back to a point where I thought where anything was possible and that all these things were going to happen. What do you think went wrong?
I think if you want to sum it up in one word, I think it might be Vietnam for a couple of reasons. One was that Vietnam was a huge financial drain on the U.S. government. And I think that, when the decisions were being made around about the time of the Eagle landing, actually, 69-70, they were sort of NASA was making plans for what to do next after the Apollo landings. They drew up plans that would have taken American astronauts to Mars, certainly by the early 90s, if not the late 80s. But I think that those plans partly fell victim to just the issues of cost, which were exacerbated by the Vietnam War. And the other reason, of course, is that if you can do a sort of counterfactual, a what-if argument, if America hadn't got tangled up in Vietnam, if perhaps President Johnson had sort of kept things scaled down rather than escalating, he might very well have gone on to do another term in 68 to run again. And he was a great supporter of the manned space program in a way that President Nixon really wasn't. And I think if there had been more money available and if Johnson had been in the White House, I think that plans to go to Mars might well have been laid down. Whether they would have been followed through the 70s with the oil shock and so forth, I'm not quite so sure, but I think Vietnam actually has a lot to do with it.
In the film, you, of course, have President Kennedy's challenge to America to land a man on the moon. It's by the end of the decade of the 60s. And you have some other film of him that I loved was him at what was then Cape Canaveral.
Rice University, in fact. At Houston, in fact.
Oh, is that where it was? Houston?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Some reason I thought it was Cape Canaveral. How did you kind of walk the line between politics and space in the movie? There was not a lot of politics, but there was some.
Yeah. I set out to make a film which was really about the human experience of leaving the Earth and going to the moon. These guys had this completely unique experience in human history. They're the first people to really see where we are in the scheme of things, to really, in a sense, understand, what a human being is in some way. So it was my, aim was to focus on that. The film then also, as it started to come together, all these things changed and grew. It sort of became about what you were talking about earlier, how that experience was shared all around the world. So it sort of became a film about America, and partly about America in the world and how America is seen by the rest of the world. So inevitably, it starts to pick up some contemporary echoes, actually, and it sort of became a movie that seems somehow strangely timely, even though it's, in some sense, a purely historical story. There's not much about now explicitly in there, but I think there's implicitly something about now. And so, in a way, it became a movie about America, but I don't think it's a political movie. It's not in any sense partisan, left or right. It's really about what makes America great, what's wonderful about America, and, as it were, what America could be, should be, sometimes is, sometimes isn't. But its aspiration as a nation to represent the best of humanity and to represent the future of humanity.
Hmm. And, David, Americans, I think, always seem to think of the moon pursuit to be distinctly theirs, something of which they can claim ownership. And
yes.
I think one of the Apollo 8 astronauts says in the movie, It was a time when we made bold moves. And I wondered, not being American, how you viewed the space program and all of this as a British citizen.
Well, funnily enough, I think that because I'm not American, I saw in Apollo something about America, not just something that America did, but also something that expresses what America is, certainly what America is when it's at its best. And I think that so it has its influence in the way that we do the music. The music is a very sort of American feel to it. It's sort of air and cape and desk. It was quite deliberate. I was sort of saying, in a sense, that there's a continuity between, it's not a terribly original observation perhaps, but there is a continuity between the pioneering spirit of the American settlers and what was happening with Apollo. And it's interesting that the astronauts are all kind of small-town American boys. I mean, they're all from that kind of stock.
Mm-hmm.
And so in a way that forms a sort of nostalgic hymn of praise to America. I think there's something very generous about Apollo. It was a kind of, it was an American enterprise and it was spurred by competition with the Soviet Union, all those things. But in the end, it was a step forward in the development of human understanding of who we are and where we are. And that was a gift from this country to the rest of the world. And in a way, the film's almost a sort of, you almost think of it as a thank you note. I think America did something wonderful with Apollo, and I think Americans should be proud of it and celebrate it. And I think it's also quite interesting to see the way that, in Britain, for example, that the people are saying, oh, it's great to see a film which makes us feel good about America. it's not just here.
And let me ask you, from that same British perspective, how do you view the Russian, or at the time, the Soviet space program? Does it have a different feel to it than the American?
Definitely. Yeah, I mean, I remember, I'm just about the same age as you are, and I remember it as a small boy, and I guess, you know, I was taken up with the rocketry and the adventure of it. But my political awareness was just beginning. I was just beginning to understand the way the world was. And I remember being very struck by the difference between the Americans and the Russians was when the Russians sent something up into space, they announced it, you know, when they were safely up there and had achieved something extraordinary. Whereas the Americans sort of invited you to the launch, and as Mike Collins says, it was just rather worrisome for the astronauts because, you know, if I make a mistake, it's going to be immediately apparent to 3 billion people. And it was just obvious that there was something different about the two, which had nothing to do with the technology, but to do with the attitude towards openness. The NASA program was a civilian program. You know, the plans for a certain five are not state secrets. You know, you can go and look at the plans for a certain five, whereas, you know, the Russian rockets were all top secret. You know? And I thought that was a very telling distinction.
The open versus closed society.
Exactly. And I think if you think back to 1961 when Kennedy makes his speech to Congress saying, you know, we cannot leave space travel to the Russians. We must do it. This is represents, in some sense, a direction that humanity is going to go in, and we must take the lead in that. I don't think it was obvious to people then necessarily that, you know, what was going to happen with the Cold War, which wasn't just a struggle for, if you like, geopolitical supremacy. It wasn't just about whose tanks are parked where. It was about which system represents the future of mankind. And there were lots of reasons for thinking, perhaps, that, you know, the planned collectivist societies of the East might have an advantage over sort of what was called a wasteful competition of the West. You know, why have 18 brands of toothpaste when one will do? Wouldn't it be much better just have one and put that money to something else? And a lot of people were sort of persuaded by those kinds of arguments. But I think that the way in which the space program developed really started to show that actually open democratic societies, when they decide to do things, when they come to a collective sort of decision about what they want to do, that sort of open and dynamic society actually is able to completely outcompete these sort of planned economies. And I think that when Neil Armstrong took his step on the moon, that was a big nail in the coffin of the communist system.
Mm. One of the one of the attractions, I think, of your film is the previously unseen NASA footage, and I wondered if you had a favorite sequence or shot from that.
Well, there is an astonishing, there's lots of wonderful stuff, but I remember, I'm sure it's the same for you, but there were two things in the 60s, late 60s that I remember as a kid. One was the Apollo program, and the other was going to see 2001, the Stanley Kubrick movie, which had a huge impact on me. I think it was the thing that started my thinking and becoming interested in film. But we have a sort of 2001 type. We have more than one, actually, but there's one shot in particular, which is a shot of the final stage, Saturn V firing, which is the stage which took them up into Earth orbit and then took them out of Earth orbit on the way to the moon.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an extraordinary shot from a sort of automatic camera mounted in the housing. This rocket fires and it leaves, and it's leaving, it's going off into space. And then the housing slowly rotates. And then you see the Earth coming into the shot, and then the camera ejects and starts its descent. You see the beginning of its descent back to the Earth. And for my money, this is the best shot in cinema history because it looks absolutely beautiful. It's stunning the way that it looks. It represents the most astonishing thing. It represents human beings leaving the planet Earth for the very first time in our history. And also, I think it's probably the most expensive shot ever conceived, if you think about what goes into it. So that's my vote for best shot in history of cinema. I'm very glad in the film we're able to run the whole shot from flash frame to flash frame.
I think that shot is in the trailer too, isn't it, for people who haven't seen the film yet?
Yeah, it's a little bit in the trailer, yeah.
Yeah, it is a great shot. And were you surprised at how poor the film quality was from Apollo 11 compared to what there was later? I mean, it's not like better equipment wasn't available by 1969.
The TV footage is very poor quality, but some of the film footage is fine. And I mean, our shot of Neil Armstrong stepping onto the moon is not the one that you're used to seeing, which
right.
is the TV downlink, which is very, very fuzzy. But it's a shot on film from inside the LEM, and you can sort of see the reflection of Buzz Aldrin reflected in the window as Neil Armstrong's taking that first step. So there's some pretty decent 16mm film footage for Apollo 11. This isn't very much of it. There's a very small quantity. It's interesting how the TV footage, though, improves between Apollo 11 and Apollo 17. By the time you get to Apollo 17, the color pictures coming back from the moon are getting reasonable quality, though they're never as good as the actual film footage shot on the moon,
right.
which we sort of show quite a lot of that, which is absolutely stunning because it's so clear.
I think the sequence that I liked, in addition to the one you mentioned of the breakaway, is the lunar rover on the moon.
Yeah.
And again, it just made me think, my God, why did we give up on this so easily?
Yeah. No, I know. It is fantastic stuff, actually. And it's terribly exciting to see it.
Now, the other exciting thing in the film is the new footage that you shot with so many of the Apollo astronauts. How did you, as the director, how do you balance how much we're going to use of each and, to get that balance just right? And I must say that, based on my – I saw the film – and I've been reading the reviews. The reviews have been spectacular, so you obviously got the right balance.
Yes, well, I think it's one of those things. You try it out in the cutting room. I mean, obviously, in a sense, the way that we approached editing, and the big problem with a film, or not the problem, the big challenge with a film like this is editing, because we started with 60 hours of interviews with the astronauts, plus a similar amount of archive footage that we already selected from thousands of hours. And so you're starting with hundreds of hours of material. How do you boil that down to 90 minutes? And so what we did was we started with by selecting some of the very best shots of and said, well, we definitely want to have those shots in, and also some of the very best parts of the interview, some of the most interesting, funny, surprising, moving parts of the interview. And then you just try to organize that material so it starts to make sense, and then bring in more material to sort of just keep the story going. And there's no great rule. You just and you start on the whole probably with more head, more talking, more of the astronauts talking, a relatively little archive. As the story comes together, then one's able to put in more and more of the archive and start to put the astronauts' voices, as it were, behind the archive, what we call voiceover. But I always wanted it to be I was absolutely clear, this is a film, as it were, told by the astronauts. There's no linking narration. It's all the astronauts' own words and the words spoken at the time from the archive. And, you know, it's just a feeling thing. You know, we want to see Mike Collins' face at this moment because his face is telling you something as well as what his voice is telling you. And I think that was our criteria for when we look at these guys. It's when you can tell something going on behind their eyes. You can see that they're there, or you can see that they're upset about something, or they're remembering something with joy. You know, all those emotions are written on their faces, and that's really the justification for looking at the astronaut's face rather than looking at the archive.
Would it be a safe guess that the DVD for this movie will be pretty spectacular?
I hope so, yeah. I'm just working on it now. I mean, we'll certainly have there's a lot of really interesting stuff that just didn't make it into the final movie, a lot of very nice archive material that's really interesting, but also some wonderfully poignant and interesting scenes that didn't make it into the movie that will be on the DVD.
Now, I don't know if this is a particularly American expression, but we often talk about the 800-pound gorilla in the room. And I wondered, I mean, the 800-pound gorilla not in your film is Neil Armstrong, and I suspect that wasn't for lack of trying.
No, it wasn't. And we were actually had a very interesting email correspondence with Neil about why he, as it were, really liked the film project. He wanted to help us, but didn't want to talk about his experiences on the moon, which is obviously a thing that we wanted to talk to him about as much as anything else. Neil Armstrong, of course, is in the film as a very strong presence, and in the end, I rather like the way that he's there but not there, so that the other astronauts talk about him. You see him as he was then, and you get a very intimate portrait of what the guy's like from his close colleagues, but he remains young, and I actually quite like that in the film. I mean, I think the reason that he doesn't talk about it is very interesting. If you look at the patches of the different missions, which are designed by the crews themselves, each mission had a mission patch. The Apollo 11 mission patch is the only mission patch that doesn't have the names of the crew on it. It has "For All Mankind." And I think that Neil takes that notion that they were merely representatives, merely messengers. They weren't the message. And, you know, as he says in the film, we, the crew of Apollo 11, are privileged to represent the United States in this venture. And one small step for a man, not one small step for me. And in the film, when Neil steps onto the moon, the film becomes about how everybody around the world shares the moment. And I think that he takes that very seriously. I'm just a messenger. Don't worry about me. It's what the message was, what we did, that's important. Don't worry about, you know, whether my nose was itching or not. But, you know, we talked to the other astronauts about bodily functions on the moon, you know. But
yes, you did. You certainly did. Buzz Aldrin, I believe.
Yes.
Yeah. That was great. And I do have to say that the footage that you do have of Armstrong's parents was wonderful. And so early in his career, it wasn't like. It wasn't, I don't want to give away what it is exactly, but it wasn't from the day before he landed on the moon. It was from when he joined the program. It was very prescient. Finally, let me ask you this, and this comes back to, I think, where we started. Politically speaking, do you believe that a movie can affect public policy, and would you like your film to impact America's approach to future space exploration?
It's a movie. It's one thing among many things that we see. And I think it's, you know, the media has a big effect on how, you know, how people see the world through television, through movies, through newspapers, through books, all these things. So cumulatively, I think that, that the media has a huge impact on what happens. It's idle to pretend that we're merely spectators and recorders of the world. I think we're active players in the world, and I get rather impatient with some people who want to deny the power of the media. And I think it's, when you make a film and lots of people are going to see it, you've got a big responsibility, you know, in all sorts of ways, you know, to be truthful, you know, not to, you know, there's a lot of films which exploit things like violence in a way which I think is quite irresponsible. So, yeah, I think obviously films have an effect. I don't think one film can necessarily change the direction of public policy very easily. But certainly what I would like American audiences particularly to come out of this film with is a sense of optimism about the future. I think what the film shows is what America can do when it really wants to, when it really needs to. And I think that's a very encouraging thing to think forward. Everybody faces lots of different difficult problems, and problems in politics and war, and also in the environment, and all sorts of ways in society. And I think that what this film shows is that when a country like America, that's self-confident and is democratic and open, when it decides it really wants to do something, it can really move mountains. It's only 8 years from 61, Kennedy, to Neil Armstrong stepping on the moon. It's an incredibly short period of time. An enormous amount was achieved. And I think that, you know, pessimism is always, and cynicism are always the enemies of anything good happening. In order to make something, in order to make a better world, you have to believe that you can actually do it. And I think that's a kind of general, not exactly a political message, but a social message I hope that people take from the film.
Well, David, thanks so much for joining us on Mr. Media today.
It was a great pleasure. Thanks.
Thank you. And folks, you can look for In the Shadow of the Moon in theaters now. And if you'd like to keep up with Mr. Media's Friday interviews, you can subscribe to the site via email at www.mrmedia.com. You can also subscribe to the feed via the podcast section of iTunes. Please come back again next week for another Fridays with Mr. Media.